The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. We have one case on the docket today, appeal number 19-2054, Hologic, Inc. versus Minerva Surgical, Inc. Mr. Hockman, I understand you are reserving 4 minutes for rebuttal. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. You may proceed, Mr. Hockman.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Rob Hockman for Minerva. The Supreme Court has ruled that a signer estoppel applies when, and I'm quoting, the inventor says one thing explicitly or implicitly in assigning a patent and the opposite in litigation. So this court needs to determine what was represented as the scope of the invention when assigning the patent and compare it to what we are now saying makes Hologic's patent invalid.
Mr. Hockman, Judge Clevenger, thought I would tell you how I see the specific task that was assigned to us by the Supreme Court. I think the Supreme Court told us to compare Claim 31 with Claim 1 insofar as moisture permeability is concerned. If Claim 1 is broader, a signer estoppel will not apply. If the scope is the same, a signer estoppel would apply. And just from where I see the claims, when I look at side by side comparing Claim 1 to Claim 31 with respect to permeability, I don't see any difference. I don't see either claim being other than agnostic as to whether permeability is involved or not involved.
I think you're focusing on the right question, Your Honor, or at least on the right comparison. The comparison is out of the application at the time, treat the term electrode array. Because remember, the only term that's at issue in Claim 31 that that Hologic claims could indicate impermeability is the term electrode array. And so I would submit for two principal reasons, the terms electrode array are different and materially so in a way that's dispositive here. So let's start just on the face of the term. The term electrode array itself suggests permeability in a way that the phrase applicator head does not. Indeed, the last time we were here, Hologic counsel...
There's an electrode array in both Claim 1 and Claim 31, right?
That's right. But the electrode array, the applicator head is what's impermeable, not the electrode array in Claim 1. This court didn't say the electrode array is impermeable. This court just said the applicator head is impermeable, and it's critical. That because Hologic told you, they told you, treat the terms applicator head and electrode array differently. And that's precisely because the application...
Mr. Hoffman, this is Judge Schultz. I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. You're saying the term electrode array, you should read that in light of the specification to have a disclaimer and say electrode array must be water permeable.
I think that's right, although I don't know whether you have to go all the way to disclaimer, because I don't think the task here is exactly the same as claim construction. Remember, Claim 31 was not an issued claim. We're not really engaged in claim construction per se. We agree with the logic. It's relevant evidence of what was disclosed in the patent, but it's not really different than anything else disclosed in the specification. It's just another use of the term electrode array. And I want to be clear, even if you understand it as claim construction in the traditional sense, we're talking about absolutely clear terms in places like the summary of the invention and the abstract. Look, this court has said C.R. Bard and Tristrata, those are places where you're talking not about specific embodiments, but the invention as a whole. And unlike the term applicator head, the patent is absolutely clear and unequivocal. The electrode array is substantially absorbent and permeable to moisture.
What about the second embodiment disclosed in the specification that talks about having a vacuum and a tube with a vacuum for absorbing the extra water? I'm just wondering how that relates to this, because it's not clear necessarily that involves the use of a water permeable layer.
Well, water would have to get to the vacuum somehow. Moisture has to get there. Right, so it has to actually involve a water permeable device because the vacuum's inside.
The specification discloses that in that embodiment, there's apertures, I believe.
Yeah.
Water goes through the apertures. Is it your position that the apertures are providing the water permeable layer?
So I think the apertures in that example are on the flexures, which are the parts that sort of expand the head, whatever the material is. So there's a variety of different parts. It doesn't really matter from the point of view of this. This gets more to the merits of our 112 claims. It doesn't really matter how the water gets in. It just matters that the water gets in. And my point.
Other question, which is in the claim, you said that claim 31 has, you know, claim one is different from claim 31 in the use of applicator head versus electrode array. But what about the fact that claim 31 has a deployment mechanism and an electrode array? And the specification says the applicator head, you know, even look at the pictures on the face of the patent, it includes some deployment or I think it might call it something else, mechanism and an electrode array. So that the claim 31 doesn't use the words applicator head, isn't it functionally the same as the deployment mechanism and the electrode array?
Well, I think that's exactly what Hologic told you not to conclude when you construed applicator head last time. They specifically said, don't think that way. And that's fine. And that's fine. Our point is just they have to live with that now. We shouldn't be stuck with them saying, don't look at electrode array. That's what they told you. Don't look at electrode array, right? Look at applicator head. It doesn't tell you anything about impermeability.
Mr. Hogman, I'm confused. Clearly the focus of attention when the case was here before on the claim construction issue was with regard to the applicator head. I think the opinion makes that clear. What I understand you to be saying today is we should just forget about applicator head and we should focus on electrode array. That's what I'm hearing you say. So if that's the case, then what I want to do is I want to compare the electrode array in claim one of the 348 with the same thing, the electrode array in claim 31. Now, if I read the spec, which is basically the same in both, let's assume I agree with you that the electrode array in both instances is water permeable.
Okay.
Then I say the scope is the same. Claim one is not broader because we're not talking about anymore the applicator head. We're simply talking about the array.
No, What's wrong with that? Yeah,
you want to focus attention. You want us to forget about the applicator hand.
Right, because the new feature.
And forget about whether or not maybe the deployment mechanism is actually the applicator hand. Shift me over, I've got to decide, sir, whether claim one, insofar as permeability, is materially different, materially broader than claim 31. And when I look at claim 31 to try to figure out what's going on with the electrode array, even though if it isn't claim construction, I have to dig into the spec, right? And the spec is exactly the same in terms, unless you can point to me to a material difference in the spec between claim 31 and claim 1 on the question of the electrode array and permeability thereof.
Well, let me,
I'm hearing you to say is your electrode array argument is actually dooming your case.
Well, actually, let me be clear about a couple of things.
Help me out and go to the spec, the two specs, and point out to me where I'm going to end up understanding the electrode array in claim one as being broader than the electrode array in claim 30.
So I think I misspoke, this might help because I think I misspoke.
Can you understand my problem?
I do understand your problem. And I think I can solve it. Let me try and walk you through
it. Well, I think you probably have to.
But I think I can. I think I can, Judge Clevenger. So if you pick up claim one, what you find is actually the term electrode array is not in claim one. This
well,
is
there
the
one or more, one or more electrodes for ablating.
But the term electrode array is not there. And the thing
yes, that I understand the in, term I understand the term array is not there, but if you take an array of electrodes out of claim one, it won't work.
If you take at least one electrode, you can't function without it. You can't function without at least one electrode. That's certainly true. But the point is what they added, and they did this on purpose. They could have picked up claim 31 and prosecuted it. They didn't do that. They added the term applicator.
Well, we don't actually know that because we haven't been given in our record the actual application for claim one.
Well, and we will submit that per the court's order. That'll be submitted as a supplement. It was submitted in the Supreme Court's record, and we will just bring that over for you.
And can you represent to me that claim one as it issued was actually in verbatim in the claim one in the 348 application in the beginning?
No. Claim one in the 348 application was drawn by Hologic, not us. That's their claim. That's the point. We never wrote that claim. That's theirs. The original application.
Well, my question is, what was the original claim in the application? But don't let us defer from where we were before. Assume for purposes of argument that I was to find an array, electrode array, in claim one that should be compared to the electrode array in claim 31.
Right. And I think...
What's your answer in how they are different as to permeability?
The electrode array in claim one itself, even if you understand the reference to an electrode in claim one to be an electrode array, and it's not there, but even if you accept that, the electrode array itself is not what this court said, nor is it what is moisture permeable. It's the applicator head. And Hologic told you,
You've thrown the applicator head under the bus.
Mr. Hoffman, I think you've got the two reversed, maybe.
Can you, let me step back and start over, right? Here's the problem. The problem is, what discloses a moisture, what is in the application at claim 31, what is it that's in there that says this covers a moisture impermeable device, right? What is it that says it? With claim one, when they wrote their own claim to try and do that,
it doesn't need to say that.
It does because
that's the same kind of argument you were making about claim one on the claim construction before.
But we're now living with your ruling that claim one does cover a moisture impermeable device.
And that's your point, counsel. This is Judge Stoll. So your view is that claim 31. Is limited to a moisture permeable device because of the word electrode array.
Because the word electrode array is quite specifically, yes.
Can I say one other thing, which is that I've heard you say multiple times that Hologic argued it this way to us, so they should be stuck with that. But the thing is you need to look at our ruling too. I mean, somebody, a party can argue a position to a court, that doesn't mean the court adopted it. Yes, we agreed that the district court didn't err in its claims instruction, but I don't think you can read things in from what you understood Hologic to be arguing to say that that's how we saw it necessarily.
But you did say it appears that the electrode carrying member is a different part than the applicator head, so something got through.
We also said there was no clear disclaimer.
Right, and of course there is a very big difference about the term electrode array in the abstract and the summary of the invention. That term does not appear. It is not discussed in those places with respect to applicator head. And Hologic, this is the point, Judge Clevenger, and I want to make sure I'm clear about this before my time runs out. Hologic picks up and runs with the term applicator head in its own patent. That's what they added. That's the broadening of the claim. Claim 31 doesn't claim an applicator head, which can be construed as moisture impermeable. That's what they added. They chose to add it, and they chose to add it because they knew they needed to add it to cover Minerva's device, which, by the way, doesn't even have an electrode. But that's neither here nor there. It heat source is different, but the point is, what you have broadening the claim is Hologic's choice to use the term applicator head, not electrode array, to not pick up claim 31 and prosecute it, to add that term so that precisely because they needed it to be broader than what was in application claim 31.
Mr. Hockman, I'm
hardly unusual that that happens in the patent world, Mr. Hockman, as you know.
Of course.
Quite often, amongst friendly competitors and intensely competitive markets, applicants frequently draw a claim to read on the competitor's product.
There's no sin in that. Absolutely.
We understand
not.
What's going on.
And to be clear, there's no sin in that. All that happened is the Supreme Court said that when you do that, you've got to independently defend the patentability of your claim.
Right. In all fairness, when your client assigned all of its intellectual property rights and sent it over to now Hologic, he didn't understand the Supreme Court was going to create a trap for the unwary.
Well, I don't think that's what the Supreme Court has done.
Clearly, there is now a trap involved for people who are going to assign their patent rights. They better be darn careful about what the breadth of things they may have had in earlier applications.
Respectfully, I disagree, Your Honor. I don't think this is a trap for the unwary at all. I think the Supreme Court's reasoning is, you're only responsible
if you lose here, you're certainly going to feel like you got caught in a trap, aren't you?
Well, I don't think there is a trap for us. What we are doing is we are asking for the application of the Supreme Court standard, which says unless our inventor represented a claim that covers a moisture impermeable device, he's entitled and his privies are entitled to challenge the validity of such device.
Well, then, just to stop there for a second, claim 31 doesn't have anything on the face of the claim that agrees on moisture permeability at all.
There's no doubt that it does not contain an express permeability
requirement. There's nothing there. And the most you've been able to dig out of claim 31 that deals with moisture permeability goes to the electrode array. And all I've said to you, and I haven't heard you say anything different to me, when you take what we know about the electrode array in claim 31 and we compare it to what we know about the electrodes and their function in claim 1, it's exactly the same scope. And
imagine you have an electrode array and the electrode array, and in this patent, in this application, it says the electrode array is mounted on something that allows moisture to go through. And then Hologic writes a patent, which is exactly what they did. This is exactly what they did. They write a patent that essentially says, let's imagine we've put a cover over it that's moisture impermeable. That's an additional claim. That's an additional element of the claim that makes it broader. And that's a different device. And there's no good reason why the inventor of the device, the inventor of this patent, should be held to barred from claiming the invalidity of that.
Mr. Hockman, this is Judge Stoll. I want to ask you about, you had two main arguments that I saw presented in your briefing before this court. One of them was that we shouldn't even be looking at Claim 31 because it was deleted during prosecution as a result of restriction requirement by the patent examiner. I want to know, you haven't mentioned that today, so I want to know if you're carrying that forward, because in response to Judge Clevenger's question about whether you thought our job was to compare Claim 1 to Claim 31, you didn't mention that.
I'm taking my cues from Judge Clevenger, of course, and I understand the focus there. I do think it shouldn't count, but I recognize that it's at least plausible that this court would conclude that it does count, and I want to be absolutely clear.
Well, just for shorters, I mean, you're a good patent lawyer. Why wouldn't it apply?
Because I think that
when you cancel a claim without prejudice, why isn't the claim still valuable intellectual property that can be transferred?
Because the Supreme Court's focus is on what's the representation made by the patentee, and when you abandon, there's all sorts of things that can happen.
Did you read the reps and warranties that your client signed when he
yep.
transferred all the intellectual property?
I understand that. And again,
a promise to your adversary that he had no reason to believe the claims were invalid or unenforceable.
And I understand that. That's true. And by the way, if they had prosecuted Claim 31...
Do you take that back today? Do you try?
No. If they had prosecuted Claim 31, we would not be sitting here...
Where's your wiggle room on whether or not Claim 31 is in play?
Because when it was canceled and 2 years go by, and at that time there's been no effort to revive it, people learn things over the course of prosecuting patent claims all the time.
Two years is a nanosecond in patent prosecution law, as you well know.
But other claims were prosecuted forward. FITIC never raised anything about it. There was never any interest in this or focus on this. I think it's just part of the mix. It would be permissible to set it aside, but you don't have to. But you don't have to because it doesn't do the job that Hologic needs them to do. And the core reason why that's so is there's nothing inconsistent in our reps and warranties. Even if they had prosecuted Claim 31, there is no doubt in my mind that in light of the summary of the invention and the abstract, that the claim would have not been construed to cover a moisture impermeable device. That's the point.
Mr. Hockman, you are about nine or 10 minutes into your rebuttal time. I know we've been asking you a lot of questions, so I'm going to restore your four-minute rebuttal time, but I do want to give Mr. Wolf ample time to address us.
Understood, and thank you for your indulgence, Your Honor. Much appreciated.
Mr. Wolf, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court.
I have a question for you. In page 3 of the reply, Minerva says, Hologic's counsel previously urged this court that, quote, that the, quote, electrode array is a different thing than the applicator head. And then they say you needed us to take that position. How do you deal with that?
Your Honor, the electrode array is one component of the applicator head. If you look at figure 2, for example, of the patent, you'll see that 2 is the applicator head, 14 is the electrode array. So the electrode array is a critical part, perhaps the most critical part of the applicator head, but it is not the same thing. And that's all I was saying at oral argument. It's a substantial subset. It's perhaps the most important, but it's not coextensive.
All right. I like Venn diagrams.
Thank you, Your Honor. By speaking to... I'm sorry, Judge Clevenger. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thought you were asking a question. By seeking a claim in his original application that does not require a moisture-permeable applicator head, inventor Shaba Chukai and his proxy Minerva are stopped from arguing that moisture permeability is an essential part of his invention, and that claims without such a limitation are invalid. I want to address a few things my friend said during his presentation. First, as a matter of simple logic, if we add limitations to Claim 1, by definition, the claim gets narrower. That's Patent Law 101. Adding a limitation narrows the claim. So by adding the applicator head limitation to Claim 1, we narrowed it vis-a-vis Claim 31. Number two, on the issue of
Mr. Wolf, this is Judge Stoll. I just want to ask you what about the fact that the applicator head, as disclosed in the patent, includes an electrode array and a deployment mechanism? I mean, how can you argue that the applicator head makes it more narrow when it's really just a word that includes certain structure that is actually in both claims?
Your Honor, the applicator head has two mandatory features for the patent. It has electrodes and it has a means of displacing those electrodes. In point of fact, Claim 1 actually recites those as well, so it's redundant in this context. All I was pointing
out... It's also in Claim 31, right?
It's the applicator head? Effectively, yes.
So the deployment mechanism...
It is.
It's retracted and expanded, and also the electrode array.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. I wasn't... In the specific context of this case, they are the same. They are contiguous. I was just pointing out that as a logical matter, if you add a limitation, they're either the same or more limited. You can't expand the claim by adding a limitation. That was the point.
I want you to really focus on right now is the argument made by Mr. Hockman, where he says, okay, we said in our claim construction that there wasn't a disclaimer as regards applicator head, but he argues that there is a disclaimer as regards electrode array, that reading the specification, we should understand that the specification disclaims any electrode arrays that don't have a water permeable barrier.
Your Honor, there are three very clear responses to that, any one of which would dispose of this. First is, let's just compare original claim 31 to original claim 16. We see original claim 16, and this is at A40360, says an electrode array carried by an elongate member, the array including a fluid permeable elastic member. Claim 31, on the other hand, at A40362, simply says an electrode array carried by the deployment mechanism. So in the original claims, which are, of course, part of the specification, the inventor, Trukai, sought some claims with a fluid permeable component and some claims without. Some claim, and both of those claims expressly recite the exact same electrode array, in some contexts with permeability and some not. At trial, his own lawyer asked Mr. Trukai, who was sitting on the witness stand, not just as an inventor, but as a corporate representative and a corporate executive, was there one, and this is at A30568, was there one particular claim that you submitted along with your application that did not require a fluid permeable exterior? Yes. And we weren't done there. It wasn't a mistake. Let's go to A30570. Same lawyer. Was this one claim 31 in the application that didn't require a fluid permeable exterior? That's right.
I hear you. But what about statements in the specification? Do you think there's anything that would cause me to look at the specification and say that is not a clear and unmistakable disclaimer?
There are 57 references to the electrode array in the drawings and the detailed description. Not one of them, not one of those 57 references says that the electrode array is permeable, let alone that it has to be permeable. The only reference that was in the original application is in the summary of the invention, and that language parallels claim 16 that I just read you. Of course, claim 31 drops the reference to moisture permeability. So, you know,
Mr. Rolf, and this argument you're making then segues over to Mr. Hockman's argument on claim one, which he says has to electrode array is narrowed to be to water impermeable, to water permeable, then your argument would be that claim one is actually narrower than claim 31.
That is our belief.
Sign or estoppel traps him again on that point.
I believe that they are bound by what they sold us and what they got hundreds of millions of dollars for. Claim one is at most, if it's not contiguous with claim 31, is a subset and therefore narrower. I want to talk briefly about this issue of the status of claim 31. The Supreme Court made it clear, and this is at pages 16 to 17 of the opinion, the question is whether Hologic's new claim is materially broader than the one Trukai assigned. So what happened after his assignment is not terribly relevant, but let's be clear what did happen after his assignment. First, the Patent Office rejected Claim 31. Mr. Trukai fought that rejection and fought it successfully and got allowance. Then the Patent Office said we want a restriction requirement because we want to separate the method claim of Claim 1 from the apparatus claims of 16 and 31. Mr. Trukai fought that. He fought that. But the Patent Office said, no, we're going to maintain the requirement. And his response to that was, okay, but I'm only going to cancel these without prejudice. And those last two points can be found at 40448 and 40453. And so as Hologic is purchasing this application, they see an inventor that fought hard for a moisture permeability agnostic claim 31 that succeeded in overcoming the rejection, that fought hard against the restriction, and when the restriction was forced on them, said, fine, but it's without prejudice that I'm withdrawing this claim.
And so when Mr. Truckeye said without prejudice, was that his invention, his use of the words, or is in the patent world, does a cancellation without prejudice have special meaning?
Your Honor, I think without prejudice in this context means precisely what we all know happens in a restriction requirement typically is I intend, or at least I certainly...
I'm unaware of anything in the MPEP that talks about a cancellation and then saying without prejudice.
I think it's just an indication that he's reserving the right to pick those five claims back up when it's restricted out.
So, personal to him.
Yeah, right.
You're saying, counsel, that it's evidence of intent.
Yeah, it's the court said, the Supreme Court said, what are the explicit and implicit representations that my client was relying on? And when Truckeye fights like heck to keep claim 31 alive, and even when he has to cancel it because of restriction requirement, he says, I'm restricting without prejudice. That certainly goes to the notion that he didn't think the claim was dead and shouldn't have been a surprise when Hologic picked it back up.
Are you aware of any sort of time limitation or other limitation on a patent owner's ability to later file a divisional or a continuation application with the restricted in claims? Is there any sort of time limitation? There was some suggestion that when you wait 2 years later, that means you've given it up.
There is no time limitation, Your Honor. I believe it's just the standard up that you have to maintain the family has to stay alive. Obviously, once the last application closes, you're out of luck. But as long as an application's alive, you can keep prosecuting restricted claims. And in fact, that's routinely how it's done. You get the issued allowed claims, and then you go back to the ones that were restricted out. And in this case, we know what would have happened because they were already allowed. Your Honors, unless you have further questions, I think that our points are in the brief. The only thing I would add to that is to cite to A30722. This is Mr. Truckeye's testimony on the stand. And the question was, all right, so in 1998, when you filed this application, all that discussion you had about moisture transport was what you invented. You thought you had invented more than that as represented in Claim 31, right? Answer, we thought we can have a broader claim. So you thought, just like Hologic thought with Claim 1 of the 348, that you could get a claim without moisture transport, right? Answer, correct.
You're arguing we should take – the Supreme Court urged us to look at the record as a whole. I believe there was language to that effect in the Supreme Court opinion and say we have to do this remand analysis looking at the record as a whole. So we should take that representation by the inventor along with his reps and warranties and his fighting the 102 rejection, et cetera, right?
Certainly, Your Honor, and also just to emphasize, he was not just an inventor. He was the corporate rep and a corporate executive, so he was not just in the posture of one of skill. He was someone speaking for the company. Unless there are further questions, I thank you for your time.
I have one more.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
It's a little peripheral. But yes, in your brief, I think that you indicated, this is your brief and footnote one, you indicate that the issue of invalidity, specifically written description, has already been addressed. I don't see that in our opinion in this court. I'm wondering, what is your basis that we address written description?
Your Honor, the basis is, so step one is the district court in the alternative addressed the issues of invalidity on the merits. And that's it, for example, in this court's opinion at 7. I have to concede, I am unclear what the court meant at 28 in your conclusion where you say, finally, we affirm the district court summary judgment of no invalidity and infringement, comma, summary judgment that Aspinall Estoppel bars Minerva from challenging validity, et cetera. So it seemed like in the conclusion, the court was separately saying we're affirming invalidity on one hand on the merits and on the other on Aspinall Estoppel. If I misread that conclusion, which is possible, then I accept that I misread it.
Okay. Our ruling affirming the district court summary is based on the application of the finer estoppel and page 1269 of the decision. But okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Clevenger, Judge Wallach, do you have any further questions?
No. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallach. Mr. Hoffman, we're going to give you 4 minutes if you need it for your rebuttal.
Yeah, I'll be very quick, and I want to say basically two things. First, I want to be very clear, Judge Stoll, about the express disclaimer here. There is no ambiguity. In the original application, the summary of the invention in the original application says the electrode array includes a fluid permeable elastic member, and that's not the only place. The abstract on page 49 of the original patent application also says it's an electrode array which is substantially absorbent and or permeable to moisture. These are characterizations of the invention as a whole. So that's first. Second, with respect to Trukai's testimony, I think if you're going to treat this like claim construction, then let's treat it like claim construction. Inventor testimony, first of all, it's not a representation. The testimony 15 years later is not a representation at the time of the assignment. So that's not what the Supreme Court is asking you to focus on.
And but it's evidence of intent, counsel.
But it's weak evidence, and that's where I'm going. But it's weak evidence because the intrinsic evidence is absolutely clear here. And if the shoe was on the other foot.
And against interest is not necessarily weak evidence.
But extrinsic evidence is weak evidence when the intrinsic evidence is clear and closes the matter off. And that's what this case is.
Mr. Hoffman, if you lose on the narrower, broader issue, this whole question of the quality of the representations and the promises, you can't win on that.
So there is, okay, so let me just respond
to that. It seems to me that your adversary shot an arrow at you.
No.
With claim 16, which is the sister claim of claim 31. And what is your response to his argument?
So, well, two things I want to say. First, I want to address claim 16. I'll get to that in a minute. But I want to start by talking about the narrower and broader issue. I know. But the very, very quickly on narrow or broader, their claim one covers both permeable and impermeable devices. That's what makes it broader. Our claim 31 only covered impermeable devices, and that's it. Now, as for claim 16, this is a matter of claim differentiation at best. In the discussion, and this court has again and again and again said a claim differentiation cannot overcome the kind of clear disclaimers that we have in this summary of the invention and in this abstract. They are definitive, and by the way, you will search in vain every single reference. You will search in vain for any reference to an applicator head or an electrode array or the electrode carrying member. You will search in vain for any reference to one that is moisture permeable, and because it obviously would fundamentally prevent the invention from achieving its goal, which is to overcome the problem of trapping moisture at the ablation site. That's the point. You have to get the moisture out of the way, and so that's what this specification says. It's clear about the term electrode array. It's not Trukai who tried to expand this to also cover devices with moisture permeable devices. It's Hologic, and they did it to try and keep their competitor off the market. And by the way, hundreds of millions of dollars went to not Shaba Trukai, but to investors who built this product out and, for what it's worth, sold a very valuable product that was the top of the line for years. Hologic got tons of benefit from this. So there's no unfairness here either. And with respect, I'll take any further questions, but I'll leave it at that.
We have no further questions.
Thank you.
We thank counsel for their arguments, and the case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The Honorable Court is adjourned from day to day.